On the south side, it's time to Rab It On with Lou Bevin.
RabbitUK.com.
Lou Bevin, countryside specialist. When it comes to the countryside, he's got it covered. In terms of knowledge, that is. Not concrete, of course. Lou Bevin, brought to you courtesy of Southside.
Quite right, too. Splendid. Lou, what a week weather-wise.
What a week weather-wise, yes. Sitting here in glorious sunshine at the moment.
I know. Well, I can't say the same up in Teesside. I think it's a bit dull, a bit greyish, but anyway, all good. We must just put out positivity and work our way through that whole routine. Put on our blonde wigs and our best sort of nail varnish and smile to the world. But I won't comment on that any further because obviously you just go too close to a colleague that we actually will, that you actually encountered. Names will be refrained from, but it's interesting times, Lou.
Yes,
yeah. We do indeed. Anyway, I can introduce you to a gentleman who is convinced he's seen you all over the place. He's seen you every time he turns around in all sorts of other areas. He's from Wales originally, so I suppose there is a connection there, given that it was indeed your grandfather, Nye Bevin, who set up the whole health service thing. Lou Bevin, can I introduce you to Jim Cleaves, Welshman from Cardiff and comedian and teacher.
Hi, Lou. How are you?
I'm very well this morning. And yourself, Boyle?
I'm fine. Tidy, thanks. A pleasure to talk to you.
Yeah, just a splendid thing for a moment. I was thinking, because tidy, actually, it doesn't just mean actually being in a neat format.
It's tidy, man. Right. Tidy, duh. Have you seen a statue of a Nye and Bevin in Queen Street, Cardiff? Duh, it's tidy, isn't it, man? That's what they say.
It makes perfect sense, doesn't it, Lou, in so many ways from that perspective. Anyway, as we were saying, and in fact we'll be able to hear our adventures at the CLA Game Fair Press Day Part 1 and indeed the Great Yorkshire Show Day 1 that'll be coming up over lunchtime here because we're playing it special for our Southside Broadcasting listeners on Channel 1 for Hospedia. If not, you can always go online to southsidebroadcasting.com and download it from there, or .podbean.com. Did your daughter Veronica manage to actually point out how to actually access these things, Lou, since we spoke this morning?
Right, well, as she's going to become a student at Aberdeen University in September, mm-hmm. she's practising.
Ah.
I.e., she'll service between 12 o'clock and 1 o'clock.
Ah, yes.
But you could say that the Yorkshire Show was the one and only, because there was only one day, wasn't there?
It was. It was quite literally that case. I mean, although, having said that, had we had the second day's weather, and I hope you'll be taking notes in Ward 23 with respect to this, if we'd had the same day's weather on day two of the Lincolnshire Show on the first day of the Lincolnshire Show, that might not have survived the 2 days there.
Or, indeed, the weather that we had down here the following day in South Yorkshire. Mm. Absolutely gorgeous.
Mm. Yeah.
It's one of those things. It's maddening, but now that you sit down, think about it, on the health and safety side of things, for you people that weren't there and didn't see it, there were a lot of frightened people going back to their cars.
Mm.
Okay, you might say, well, I've been told before. Yes, you've been told in sunny weather, down a street with your mate pulling the car, and you've said, now look, just go at 20 mile an hour. These were huge crawler tractors, rather like Chieftain tanks. Cars are parked as tight as possible. It would have been an absolute nightmare.
Yeah, we saw the news reports of like tractors and sort of bulldozers looked like
pulling out
horse boxes, and I was sad because I was going to come along on the Wednesday or the Thursday because on the Tuesday morning it was raining a lot in Redcar, and I hoped it would get better on the next days, but sadly I didn't get to see the show. But like you say, because of health and safety and liability and such these days, the piles of mud are about 4 foot high, weren't they, Lou?
Well, it was terrible. They were trying to scrape to find what we call good ground, which they could pull you onto. So, yeah, those big bulldozers, they were needed because they were shoving the literally 2 foot of muck, shoving it into piles so that they had some hard ground that they could get the vehicles onto. And it's a long way. I mean, it's possibly 3/4 of a mile to get them onto a highway.
Yeah.
That is a long way. And the cars were, well, it was like towing a balloon on a windy day. They were just slewing right, left, centre. It was hairy.
When I watched it on the news and people were saying, well, we're going to seek compensation and that. And I think, well, nobody can foresee this. And if it had been cancelled before the first day, then people would have been complaining about that they didn't give it a try, and
that's
it seems
right.
You can't please some people.
That's right. I'm afraid, and you look around this year, it's going to be, let's just hope that we get, as I say, weather like I've got here today. We've got a pretty important 2 weeks coming up down in London, something beginning with O, and we want a bit of good weather. I mean, I'm even reading where the my wife is a leading greyhound veterinary surgeon, and the magazine that she gets, the a magazine called The Calendar, that's come today, and there's a big greyhound event on in Wimbledon, and it's also on the same day as the road race for the cyclists in the Olympics.
Cool.
So it's a very important greyhound race, a puppy derby, in fact, and so they're already giving the trainers ideas of which roads to use, because you don't want to get stuck with a greyhound, a racing animal that's going to be sat for 6 hours dehydrating in the back of a vehicle.
No, oh no, absolutely, because we've heard all the sad stories in the past, well I have, about police dogs
exactly
dying in the back of police cars. It seems to happen all the time, and I can't believe it still happens.
Yeah, so the governing body of the greyhound world, quite rightly so, are telling all the trainers, you know, which roads to definitely avoid, and, you know, which kind of ways to get to the track, because the event's been planned for well, at least since they had it last year.
Yeah.
So they wanted to go ahead. It's one of the big events on the calendar for the greyhound owners, so they're making contingencies anyway.
Hmm. Lou, we were talking earlier, a slight sceptical view of the Daily Telegraph story by Hannah Furness about schoolchildren in Barnsley being given swearing lessons in terms of how acceptable it would be to shout the F word across a classroom or shopping centre. Any views of somebody who's also based in the People's Republic of South Yorkshire and whether that's an acceptable teaching style? Have you employed it yourself when you've been dealing with youngsters slightly older in the system?
Well, having taught at Barnsley for some time... I really engaged with this group. There were the lads called Neats, you know, that had not been in education, training, etc. And I was teaching them the posh word of horticulture.
Oh, nice.
We were gardening. And it was a lovely period of weather. And so I said, come on then, lads, we'll plant some seeds. Right, so of course I showed them how to press your finger into the compost down to the depth of one knuckle. So, of course, I've got a few lads that insisted on shoving their fingers in so far that they put them to the bottom of the plant pot. But anyway, 1 week later, when we went back to the greenhouse, quite a lot of the seeds had germinated. And I must say that one or two of the lads expressed really great... Did I plant that? Yes, this is all your work. OK, click, I've engaged with them. 2 weeks later, a young gentleman who shall remain nameless said, you're good, you were growing things. I said, yes, I know, and I'm going to teach you how to be good. He pulled out of his pocket a mangled bit of polythene bag. Can they get some of this going, he said. It was cannabis.
Oh, God.
Quick as lightning, Dad. Only been teaching him 2 weeks. He realised just what knowledge I could impart to this head of his. And he produced... And when I asked him, quite quietly, pulled him to one side, said, look, who gave you your first joint? Do you know what sickened me? He said it was his father.
Oh, yeah, I can believe that.
Interesting times, yeah. Education thing. When you were sitting in prison, you must have had several tales which you could have encountered, really, Jim?
All sorts. From people about to shank each other with improvised knives made out of plastic spoons and such, and how what was saddened me, a lot of the prisoners in Home House, well, I'd say the majority of them, young men, you know, around 20, 25, can't write very well. They can't read, some of them, and they've been through the care system, in and out of care homes, their whole lives. Lost their parents, a lot of them. And it doesn't excuse, obviously, it doesn't excuse crime, but it does make you understand that they were so disadvantaged to start with. And when I was talking and teaching these people, violent murderers, some of them, they were respectful to me because I was respectful towards them. And it was a wonderful chance to get to meet them, really, and try and rehabilitate through education what little impact I might have had. But it really opened my eyes to, you know, I used to think, oh, prisoners, you know, get them on the treadmills to generate electricity and all this and that. And now I have a different outlook on it. But a lot of them were, obviously, you go into prison without a drug problem and you come out addicted to methadone because that's what they give you in the prisons.
Yeah.
A lot of the time.
Interesting sort of views on that whole perspective. I don't think whether actually sort of got whether they thought that actually having children being taught about how to swear or not to swear actually was a good idea or a bad idea. But still, I think he managed to round off the thing quite neatly on that basis.
Well, I read the headlines actually in the Yorkshire Post this morning, but to be honest, I didn't bother reading it. Stories like that just don't... Besides which, have you been to Barnsley? You wouldn't understand them anyway, because I think God was from Barnsley, because they all talk thee and thou and that, and the only way you read that is in the Bible.
There we have it. So, David Millwood, transport editor for the Daily Telegraph, writes, speed limits on many country roads are to be cut to 40 miles per hour as part of plans to reduce motoring accidents. Guidance unveiled by the Department of Transport yesterday will make it easier for local councils to introduce the limit on the quietest roads. Most rural roads are governed by a 60-mile-per-hour speed limit, and the announcement was made shortly after figures showed the first rise in road deaths and serious injuries in 17 years, with 1,901 people killed last year, 3% rise on 2010. So dropping to 40 miles an hour, good idea, Lou?
OK, something which they ought to look at in conjunction with this. I'll tell you why the road deaths have gone up, and I can see it round here. I live bang out in the middle of the country.
Yep.
I've come to a junction now where there's a grass verge at the side of the road. The local authority who manage that verge, i.e. cut it once a month, have now come up with a master plan that they only cut one run of the cutter, i.e. a 3-foot strip. They should use two or three to get the whole verge. What this means is that every junction you come to, the grass and the herbage on the roadside is 4 feet tall. You can't see around corners. So there are other mitigating factors, but I don't drive fast anyway.
It's wonderful stuff. Moving on, Lou, I know that we talked about this on Tuesday, and Jim was interested when I mentioned, obviously, your rural expertise. I think, Jim, you want to take the line on the milk crisis.
Yeah, I've seen on Facebook and on the news people asking for opinions on what consumers think about paying extra for milk to support, you know, local farmers and such. And as a consumer myself, I go in supermarkets and they all sort of price match each other pretty much. And you can get, say, 2 litres of milk for about £1, which seems pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
When I was young, we used to have a local milkman. And I don't know how much a pint costs off a milkman these days. What's it, around 50p or something like that, is it?
Yeah, a little bit more.
Is it? Yeah. So I'm conflicted as to how to answer these people when they say, would I pay more? Because really, I take the easy option and buy the supermarket milk. And some people may say that will still mean that there is a dairy industry because everyone will still have milk. But what are your views, Lou? Because I didn't hear Tuesday's conversation.
Right, well, one, I didn't want to say it, but and I don't want to make it sound like it's the farmer's fault, number one, right?
Yeah.
But we've got, as you have within anything, whether it be soccer, rugby, anything, you've got the Super Leagues and you've got the also players.
Yeah.
The super farmer who's got the super cows, and by that I mean cows that will give 11 and 12... 14,000 litres a year.
Yeah.
He's making really, really good money. The average farmer with cattle out in the fields, as we used to know it, he's probably getting 6,000 to 7,000 litres only from his cattle.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't need a higher national in maths to work out that. And remember, you're giving these cattle the same amount of feed. So your cost to produce
is the same
from cow A or cow B is £100. If you're going to get so much per litre for your milk, you need to be getting double the litreage. If you're getting double the litreage, you're making very good profits.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, it's a bit like the Manchester Uniteds of this world and that. They've taken football to a level that nobody else can play at.
Yeah.
They're getting, it's because they're very, very good farmers, but not all farmers, it's a bit like running racehorses. Not all people can afford the £1 million racehorses that run in the Derby.
So is it the cows that are the expensive sort of asset, or is it how you get them to produce milk, or is it what you feed them? Is it the cow that is the...
I was shocked to find out this week at the Great Yorkshire Show, thanks to Lou's expertise, that certain cows are being fitted with false udders. Or not udders, or bits that they put into udders, like prosthetic devices.
That's right. When the cow is being judged, obviously the udder shape and everything is very, very important. So they warned all the veterinary surgeons that are standing at the country shows this year, if you do see a cow with a grossly big udder, checker, because they're using a teat blank which fits in the end of the teat to stop any milk leaking out. You fit it 48 hours before the beast is being judged, and of course the bag is then so full of milk it distorts it, gives it an advantage. So that's something that the vets have been told to watch out for this year. But yeah, it's just down to, if you've got Super League cows giving phenomenal amounts of milk. I mean, it's almost unbelievable. Mm. In fact, a few years ago, with the thing about cholesterol, etc., farmers were asked to produce milk with lower butterfat content. In the old days, remember the Golden Top, the Jersey milk, the Channel Island milk? It was yellow halfway down the bottle because it was so creamy.
Yeah.
But then they were asked to stop producing 5% butterfat and get down to 3.2 or something like that because of the cholesterol levels. Now they've decided, some 25 years later, which isn't a long time in agriculture, oh no, it's not harmful at all. We want cows now producing big butterfat again. It's just crackers the way that somebody or some think tank come up with these ideas, and then we've got to chop and change everything. We can't change things overnight, and actually 20 years in livestock is basically overnight.
It really is. If I was in the milk industry, what I would do, I'd water it down and see if anybody noticed. Then I could produce twice as much milk, and people would be going, tastes a bit different.
That's outrageous, Jim. It's a real Welsh attitude.
I can't see them doing that, though.
It has been tried.
Really?
It has been tried, but actually all the milk that comes in the tanker is sampled.
Yeah.
First thing it's sampled for, obviously, again, it's a health and safety, public health thing to check, could it be salmonella, campylobacter, or anything else in there. So, obviously, it's 99% water anyway, but they can judge when there's even a bit more been put in, so... That's a non-runner, I'm afraid.
Yeah, sure.
It's obviously coming from the Department of Glasgow Rangers, good ideas, but still never mind. I won't ask you for your comments on Glasgow Rangers entering into the third tier of Scottish football, but, you know, it just goes to show sometimes it can all go terribly pear-shaped.
That's not how the mighty fall.
Well, you know, so you just carry on regardless. That's the important thing. Lou, it's been fabulous touching base with your good self as ever.
Yeah.
Hopefully, I mean, we're looking again at a couple of sort of lines here. Bakewell is one of the possibilities that we're talking about. Certainly, that's the Newmarket weekend, so it'll be well. We'll connect again before too long. But have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic chat with us on Southside Broadcasting today?
It's been very good, boy.
Splendid. I thought he'd gone Pakistani for a few moments there.
I'm going to finish with Nostar.
Tidy. Crucial.
So I take it then you will return?
I will be back.
Unfortunately, I don't think he'll be closing the Olympics or opening the Olympic ceremony with silver rain was falling down upon the dirty ground of London town. But perhaps he should. What say you, Alan Stevens?
I never really liked
Wings,
to be honest.
Well, Denny Lane, Linda McCartney, all wondrous folk. But then, this summer, stay calm and read Telos books. Specifically, by your command, Alan Stevens and Fiona Moore. Just part of a Starburst exclusive for Telos. Then we turn the page back to page 117. And as we noted last week, released on the 30th of June, once upon a time, every TV show with a vaguely enthusiastic following had an episode-by-episode guide published. But these days, to convince the fan base to splash out on a wedge of printed paper rather than just look up the wiki on their phone, you have to offer more. Stevens and Moore certainly offer that in their book on the original Battlestar Galactica and short-lived follow-up Galactica 1980. The show makes a great subject with its tumultuous production history, and the best sections are the overviews of the show and its ill-fated sequel. The picture that emerges of the American TV industry in the late 70s is fascinating. An opportunist environment where studios rip off each other's movies, make them into TV shows, and then sue each other. It's a miracle that anything watchable emerged from this, let alone anything that stands up to the level of analysis each episode receives later in the book. But that's the joy of this kind of criticism, to see how far you can break down a piece of ephemeral entertainment before it falls apart. 4 out of 5 stars, by your command, Eddie Robson, quite rightly so, in a second volume of By Your Command, covering the 21st century remake, is set to follow sometime in the future.
Yes, you missed it the bit where it didn't get 5 stars. Apparently, it could have been longer. Which is very encouraging, isn't it?
Well, it's good. I mean, all right, I won't be accused by the author of saying you've just missed out the best bit, because we have got a few. In fact, actually, in upcoming weeks, we've got the author of The Odds by Adam Parrott, who'll be joining us on the show, and also the fabulous Sarah Hammond, who wrote The Night Sky in My Head. Just in my head, really. It's very confusing. But But the official line was, the book, that's by your command, is strong on behind-the-scenes detail, assessing first-draft scripts to see how they compare to the finished product. In fact, the main flaw is that it leaves you wanting to read a day-by-day account of the production to track the unfolding chaos. However, on its own terms, it's as good a guide to the show as you could hope to read.
Leave them wanting more, that's the answer.
Yes.
But hopefully, because you've got another book to come.
Well, that's always important. And then, as I say, with the relaunched, well, I say relaunched, quite gone away, but Starburst, issue 378, whose editor, these days I noticed, editor-in-chief is the fabulous Des Skin, who I met a good few years ago. I know, a blast from the past for some of us, really, from that point of view. Hammer, House of Horror, and a variety of other things. With Jordan Mike Royce being the editor. If I turn to the back page of the July edition, issue 378, I see, of course, the big full cover page, Sunday the 1st of July 2012, which, of course, has passed us by now, and it wasn't cancelled due to inclement weather, live performance, Paul Darrow, Avon from BBC's Blake 7, Robots of Death, and Storm Mine, plus Q&A. Tickets were mere £20. There we are. That's at www.fabcafe.co.uk. So it's all been go, and just in case you thought we hadn't been paying attention to the whole sort of Stevens-esque thing, or in the words of Jim Cleaves, oh, Alan, he's the angry one, isn't he? That's how you defined him, Jim. You said he's the angry one, the angry writer. Is he on regularly then, this angry writer?
I was asking you, were you on every week? Because I've managed to speak with you three times now, Alan, and... It's all
lucky, I guess. I'm angry because I'm continually not on. Why aren't you on, Alex?
Well, you see, it's been a case of, I mean, this very day, listeners have been regaling themselves or having the enjoyment of Sarah Gayton, Katie Grimerson, Lou Bevin, and indeed, just D. World was in the studio. It's just been fabulous, really, on that sort of basis. Have we missed anybody out there, Jim?
Don't think so, no.
I really think so. Sarah
Grimmer.
Hello, Fiona Moore. There we are. We'd actually missed out Katrina Lakin. So is how quickly you forget the Abbey Bells chorus. Oh. Yeah,
that's right. My bad.
How could you forget?
I've said that so frequently. Fiona, as a Canadian, and as Jim said when we were talking about Phil Lennis, you like Canadians and Americans, they're just under Canada. There you are, quite clear. So, Fiona, how has the weather been for yourself? And, perhaps even more importantly, Aisha and Zukov, have they been inside for most of this time? Have they been sort of complaining as to the lack of country shows? What's been going on there?
Well, they're cats and it's rainy. What do you think?
Yeah.
They seem to have this, not entirely illogical idea that we can change the weather, which makes sense when you consider that they see us regularly change the weather indoors by flicking a switch on a light or the
turning
heater.
Up heating. Yeah.
So naturally, they assume that we can do something about the outdoor weather, too. So
turn the rain off.
Yes. So when it rains, they come up and they say, go out there, do your job, go out there and turn the rain off for us.
It's understandable.
No, don't.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. They probably think that...
It goes off and goes out, gets wet, comes back, it meows a little, sort of toning down, then it goes out, gets wet, comes back. I think he's got a fetish working out here.
Yeah, so he's got some kind of strange attraction to being toweled down. We really don't want to go into it too much.
It's a rough towel.
It is simply life and times, of the joy of stains on Thames.
Brillo pads.
With only a couple of weeks to go, are you anticipating the joy of the Olympics, and has anybody actually considered sighting missiles on the roof of your house in Staines?
I'm thinking of sighting missiles at the Olympics. Probably the FBI be reminded.
Yeah, best not say that over an open phone line, Alan, really. We disassociate
it
ourselves.
It was a joke.
Exactly.
Yes, actually, come to that, Royal Holloway is currently part of the athlete's village for the rowing, and... basically, the general unofficial word out on campus is, if you can work from home, do, because, although everybody says, oh, it's terribly exciting and terribly wonderful and all that, what it basically means is that the campus has more G4S operatives at the moment than it does students, and, they're all sort of going around looking terribly confused, which, if you've been on our campus for 5 minutes, I can understand, but, a bunch of confused G4 operatives are not people I really want to be around right now.
Yeah, there's no other type.
I did. I was thinking maybe you could actually sort of approach them for possible postgraduate work. Maybe go sign up a few mature students. If they consider that kind of line.
I think they've got enough students here. They're a bit overbooked at the moment, aren't they?
Yes. Well,
classes of 200.
And yes, is it
well, I do have a friend, actually, whose area of research is in cybersecurity, but something tells me that that's a bit more technical than boots on the ground.
Yeah, the cybersecurity, some people are saying that the NatWest Bank was cyber-attacked, and O2 and other phone networks this week, that they may have been cyber attacks. I don't know if there's truth in that.
Yeah,
but
to be honest, I'm more inclined to blame the fact that if you start downsizing and you start sacking all the people who actually know how the IT system works, then sooner or later you're going to wind up with nobody who knows how the IT system works.
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
As ever, Fiona's managed to actually put her perceptive fingers right on the metaphorical perceptive point there. You may actually be interested in this one, which I'm sure will echo with Phil Leonis, and the truth is out there, that the United States government agency has officially denied the existence of mermaids.
Yeah, I read that.
Yeah. After a programme about the creatures was broadcast on the Discovery Channel, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration received so many inquiries from the public that it was moved to post the following message on its website. Are mermaids real? No evidence of aquatic humanoids has ever been found. What about the man from Atlantis?
And it doesn't mean they're not there?
Exactly.
Or a man.
Maybe they just don't want to be found.
Exactly. They're deep swimmers. Apparently there's more sort of species in the underwater that we haven't found than those that we have.
Mm-hmm. So I didn't know that, though. You haven't found them.
And there is the track record.
Nail
that
head, bang.
It is not the first time an agency has been forced to take such action. The U.S. Center for Disease Control once denied the existence of zombies. CDC does not know.
It's very hard now, though.
No, CDC does not know of any virus or condition that would reanimate the dead. Well, they've obviously never been to Redcar.
Or worked for G4S.
Fiona, before you came on air, I've not been too controversial today, have I? You know, he drops that one in.
Is this your Welsh accent?
No, it's just I'm
from Delhi.
Yeah, exactly.
Mr. Cleaves is from Cardiff City.
A shopping centre in China has provided a women-only car park for its customers. How can you tell? Well, the underground facility has bright pink walls decorated with hearts and flowers, pink neon signs, female attendants, and extra wide bays.
Well, Aisha would like that, wouldn't she? A bit of pink.
Yeah, she would.
Her cat
likes
pink.
Yeah. Precisely. And this particular line, which I'll be particularly interested in terms of gender awareness, whether this is an appropriate answer. A 26-year-old driver from Buckinghamshire has complained bitterly about being stopped by police for being distracted by a woman's bottom. Doug McLean was caught on camera leaning over and staring back at the pedestrian as he drove past and issued with an on-the-spot fine. McLean grumbled, "Nicking another bloke for looking at a pretty girl is no way to make a living." He's a gunsmith, apparently. "She had a very nice backside and I wanted to check out her face to see if it was as nice as her figure. It's what practically every bloke on the planet would do. The girl was a cracker, but it wasn't worth getting a £60 fine."
I used to do that on motorbikes.
Yeah, so if he doesn't, driving dangerously is still driving dangerously.
That's true.
If he hasn't figured out by now that there's a time to keep it in your pants.
Yeah, we'll have to get women to walk backwards up the street, then he'll...
Or wear burkas.
In terms of the... Have you seen The Shard, guys? I mean, have you actually been into I mean, Fiona, have you managed to catch The Shard? Yes, yeah, because...
No, I don't really feel much...
Passing a train, there's a laser show going on while I'm embarking.
Yeah.
I don't really feel much in the way of desire to spend £40 on actually seeing what the view from the top is like.
I was going to say, it's £24.95 for adults and £18.95 for children if you wish to actually access the viewing platform. 95 stories, currently the tallest in Western Europe, and it's 1,016 feet high.
You've memorised this, haven't you?
I'm taking this from the usual sort of selection of stories that we normally have actually addressed earlier in the show, but due to all sorts of other areas, we had to sort of just work our way through this. And in the spirit of the age, although they spend their working lives running up ladders and carrying casualties from burning buildings, British firemen are overweight. In fact, they're more likely to be overweight than the general public. Loughborough University measured the body mass index of 735 firemen. Women were not included. And they found that 53% were overweight and 13% of firemen obese.
That's BMI for you, isn't it? I'm technically obese if you take BMI into account, but that's because I'm 6'3", weigh 16 stone, and there's not an ounce of fat on my body.
Well, there you are.
I did the the BBC on their website at the moment, they've got a calculate your BMI and see how you stand relative to the national and the world average for somebody of your height and weight.
Yeah.
And then they tell you sort of what country, your BMI is most normal in. So I tested mine and they said that my BMI is most normal in Ethiopia.
Oh. Yeah. Well, there we are. I suppose Bob Geldof would have been very impressed a few years ago,
yeah,
but these days...
sending you blankets
and all sorts. What a gigantic chess piece that is that you're holding on your Facebook site, Fiona. We commented on this in your absence last week, but I have to say, very impressed with this whole side of things. I mean, I'm always interested in terms of what people choose for their profile, and clearly I go for the avatar of Stephen Strange, Master of the Mystic Arts. You,
very
Fiona, you went very much for the king chess piece.
Told you about the Yoko Ono retrospective we went to the other week.
That's right, yes.
Yeah, well, anyway, we were just fooling around with play it by trust and, moving the pieces around like you're supposed to, anyway, at one point I decided to checkmate the whole board by physically walking off with the king, and Helen took a picture.
Very good. And from the world of, well, it's bizarre and taken out of context, it's a quote from Facebook. I still can't quite understand where, with reference to your Ethiopia comment on body mass index, a certain Didi Cushing said, "Don't recall seeing a lot of redheads when I was there."
Okay, Didi, if you follow my feed, you'll see an awful lot of Didi. Didi is somebody who I have known since we were both 13. She is a very interesting, very intelligent person doing a PhD in medieval studies, whose backstory includes two tours in Iraq as a U.S. Marine and one in Ethiopia as part of the U.S.'s contribution to the peacekeeping force that kicks around the Eritrean border.
Very good.
So she has a lot of really interesting stories about North Africa and the Middle East.
And sounds like the sort of person we should be featuring on the show.
Yeah, that's
actually
what I think.
Yeah,
I mean, if she'll do it. She lives in Arizona these days.
That's not stopped us beforehand.
She's around the corner.
Los Angeles, New York. You know, Arizona's more or less in the middle of the whole thing.
If you can keep in regular touch with Ilana, who I understand goes down to that part
exactly
of the world fairly regularly.
Exactly.
Then,
Where is Ilana now, by the way?
Back in New York, chilling out.
When's she back in London?
Very soon, hopefully. Currently, I've seen the treatments. I've been privileged to see the treatments for our latest two suggested lines, and they're very exciting. I can say no more, but they are very exciting. Obviously not on air. Off air, we can obviously talk quite merrily because had it not been for Ilana, you wouldn't have actually got Richard Hatch to do the sort of piece for the text command.
Yeah,
exactly.
That's for you, really. Actually, we've may have written your name into the second book, so
I just feel humbled beyond belief. I mean,
I
missed
on the first one.
Yeah, I really don't know how that happened either, because we really should have, and I feel totally embarrassed about it.
Oh,
please accept my most
Fiona, it's all good. You see, this is what happens when academics get very concerned about acknowledgments and various other bits and pieces, so it's all right.
I think there's a Buddhist idea that if you create something, you always have to put some slight flaw in it.
Exactly.
So the slight flaw we put in their book was not including your name on it.
It's all wondrous at the end of the day. Would you like to give me a random number, folks? And I think Fiona will go between 0 and 100, please.
24.
And this is a little excerpt from, indeed, a new text that's been written called The Odds by Adam Parrott. Mrs. Odd looked at her children. Her expression changed from one of horror and surprise to one of deepest joy. "Oh, my wonderful little bags of weasel guts! I'm so proud of you, thinking up that marvellous prank all by yourselves. That's two already this morning, and we haven't even finished breakfast. My mini mischief makers will be professional pranksters before I know it." Edgar glowed with pride as Elsie continued her cackling. Just then, Mr. Odd gave a pained yell and stumbled out of the kitchen, his hands flailing around like an angry windmill. The two baby crocodiles had clamped their tiny jaws onto both of his forefingers. Mrs. Odd and the twins burst out laughing. Tears were streaming down their faces when all of a sudden there came a loud crack. A second later, Edgar and Elsie found themselves flat on the floor, covered by the contents of the table. Their chairs lay in pieces around them.
What are chairs?
And cheers.
Yeah,
cheers. That's a nice one, exactly. It's
what rich people sit on.
Exactly, yeah. Cheers. Like trousers. Trousers and cheers. It's very important. Yes, The Odds, a little book that we'll be featuring Adam Parrott from later. Have you ever fallen flat on your face when you're carrying an ice cream, or put down a drink, gone back to get it, and it's nowhere to be seen? That's The Odds at Work, a family of professional pranksters who delight in playing the most rib-tickling tricks on the townspeople of Trot. But when the fiendish Mr. and Mrs. Plopwell move in nearby, the odds meet their match. This calls for some serious mischief-making. There we are. Adam Parrott, based in Manchester, will be joining us in the very near future. Just a little tease ahead.
So yeah, sounds of things there. Quite fun.
Well, you know, in an odd sort of way. What are the odds?
At least he was bitten on the ball.
Roger Irrelevant from VizCom.
Oh, don't I? Yeah, definitely. I love Viz.
Hat stand. For some reason, I had a flashback to him just 2 minutes ago. I don't know why that was.
I always get the flashback to Terry so-and-so, but I can't say what his surname is. From Viz.
Not Buster Gonads.
No, Terry. But you'll have to, yeah.
Technically, Buster Gonads and his unfeasibly large testicles, to be precise. I mean, we were just talking with Lou Bevan about how cows can sometimes have distended udders because they've been not allowed to give them milk,
that's
really
what Buster Gonad had.
It did, clearly.
He carried them round in the wheelbarrow.
Billy the Fish didn't have such problems, but never mind.
No.
So it goes.
We've had piles. What was
that? Nobby's Piles.
Nobby Piles, yeah.
Ooh, me bum grapes.
Ooh, me grapes, yeah.
And this is what Simon's legacy to the whole thing. Well, Simon Donald, of course, legacy to the world.
He's doing stand-up now as well again.
Well, that's why he launched his career with respect to Southside Broadcasting. Who knows what could happen from that perspective. It's time he actually joined us back on the show again. Anyway, finally, from this morning's little newspaper review, which has been ably co-presented by Fiona Moore and Alan Stevens today, we've got Olympics security firm, the fiasco is our fault. According to the Daily Mail, security firm G4S finally accepted full responsibility late last night for the fiasco over providing guards for the Olympics.
Finally.
They've been spending too much time on Royal Holloway College.
Yeah, and
clearly.
Yeah, exactly.
Fitting tags to Oscar. No, what's he called? Usain Bolt, that's right, to check how fast he's really going to go.
They could have tried Oscar Pistorius as well.
Yeah, but I stopped myself because I got the wrong name.
There you are. Spider-Man. Have you seen the movie as yet?
Nope.
Do you intend to?
Still not convinced. It takes a lot to get me out to a superhero movie these days.
Yeah, I'm not very keen on. I mean, there have been some very good ones, we know, but a lot of them aren't.
Oh, so there we are. I actually watched on DVD yesterday John Carter of Mars.
Oh, any good?
I can see what people meant in terms of thinking it is rather long, because I did think, goodness, this has been going on quite some time. It was only like 1 hour it actually clocked by, really. I think there's promise and potential there. It wasn't quite realised. A nice little hook with Edgar Rice Burroughs, or the character that is manifested as Edgar Rice Burroughs, which is quite a nice little twist. Tyler Kitsch, I think, is a reasonable actor. He probably needs a few more movies under his belt. I think it was fair. Mark Strong didn't do it. You know, he was reasonable, but then he had Green Lantern last year, which also didn't really succeed, so... Mixed feelings, really.
Yeah. Not a big comic book fan, really.
Well, I mean, John Carter technically was Pulp Fiction, really.
You mentioned...
But I have actually rediscovered the joys of Doc Savage. Have no fear, the Man of Bronze is here.
So. Green Lantern, who is now gay, or possibly gay, it seems he is actually really gay in an alternate universe or something, but I can't really get my head around
it. to be precise, Fiona, because there have been several Green Lanterns, and of course there's a full Green Lantern Corps, as looked after by the Guardians of Oa, but in terms of Green Lanterns of Earth...
Shut up! Shut up, I can't stand it!
It's not Hal Jordan, Guy Stewart, or indeed Kyle. I think it's the first Green Lantern of Earth 1.
Yeah, actually, it's an alternate universe version of the Green Lantern from Earth 1. Seriously.
Poor Alan, he's suffering.
as Fiona and myself regularly like to say. Yeah. In brightest day, in blackest night, no evil shall escape our sight. Let those who worship evil's might beware our power, Green Lantern's light.
I'm going there.
Right.
I haven't got a clue what any of that's on about. I'm missing it.
And looking ahead, we have the CLA Game Fair Press Day 2012. The only input from Beaver Castle this year, because, of course, next week it's
Beaver
been...
Beaver Castle?
I know. I can't wait to get there.
It has...
Making this up.
It's where they film Baywatch.
No, it's BELVOIR, Beaver, Beaver Castle, Leicestershire. And sadly, it has been cancelled. So next week, when we would have been saying we'd be at the CLA Game Fair at Beaver Castle, we won't be, but you can actually find out some of the things which we were talking about at Beaver Castle last Monday.
It's not Hugh Hefner's house, is it?
No. it's just a dreadful...
That's funny. This is why this guy is the foremost Welsh comedian.
Wannabe.
And not Rob Brydon. So, anyway, the bottom line is, as they would frequently say at Beaver Castle, not. Would you like to ask those last two questions to Alan Stevens and Fiona Moore, please?
I will, certainly. Fiona And, Alan, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us today?
Indeed, yes.
And will you be joining us again in the near future?
I don't know. It's up to Alex, isn't it, really?
Well, there is a...
I've ignored her 5 months.
Yeah, well, it's suddenly, I say, whilst we thought... I mean, we can thank the weather, Alan, for you being here and back with us today, because otherwise we wouldn't have been studio-based, so I look forward to hopefully connecting with your good self in maybe 168 hours from now.
Well, there's two things I'd like to say before you go. Mm-hmm. The first one is, please, everyone remember that on the 22nd of this month, there is the Robots of Death starts its Fab Cafe, what do I call it? Performances.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. In Manchester. And the second thing is, I've just picked up the latest copy of CT, Celestial Toy Room, which is a Doctor Who Appreciation Society magazine,
mm-hmm.
and turned to a page which says, Opinion, My Favourite Companion. I just like to read the very first line of one of these. It says, Chameleon. My favourite companion is Chameleon because he's the only companion the Doctor deliberately executed.
Well, I mean, there is an argument that he knew about Adric's death, of course, but are you saying that, you know, in terms of Chameleon, it was just a case of it wasn't there?
Deliberately executed.
Yes, deliberately.
Gunned him down like a dog.
Who's Adric?
So there have been many deserving candidates, but Chameleon's the only one who actually made the grade.
Mm-hmm.
Despite being a shape-changing android, he was destroyed by the use of the Master's tissue compression eliminator, which suggests a very loose definition of the word tissue indeed.
Very true. And, of course, let us not forget he was King John.
In fact, it mentions that.
Yeah.
It says, according to the Master, Chameleon is a tool of an earlier invader of Zarephath, and he certainly is a tool of one form or another.
There you are.
Although a pretty useless
back
man.
To G4S again.
Chameleon's first appeared in The King's Demons playing an anti-Muslim ditty on a medieval lute, then vanished for 5 stories before making his final appearance in Planet of Fire. Somehow, this qualifies him for full companion status.
And, of course, as those of us who watch the DVD extras on such delights as, indeed, The King's Demons will attest to, the original plan was that he was going to have a much greater say in the whole Doctor's routine, but was found to be pretty useless in the studio.
Well, what happened was that the guy who built him and knew how to control him was unfortunately killed in a motorboat accident. And so no one really knew how to operate the thing, and it couldn't walk.
Was that a motorboat accident when he was actually sitting in his chairs?
Probably, yeah. If you want to joke about this poor man's death.
No. Celebrate good times. He's moved on to different worlds, etc.
In fact, everyone, a lot of people, I don't want to say this, but a lot of people connected with Chameleon. There was a curse of Chameleon, like the guy Gerald Flood did the voice, died, mm-hmm. the guy who created him. Died.
John Nathan Turner passed away.
John Nathan Turner, producer who brought him in, died. The writer of the Chameleon's final story, Peter Grimade, died. The writer of Chameleon's very first story, Terence Dudley, died. The director of it was a whole load, wasn't there?
Is there anyone still alive?
Sorry?
It sounded like everybody's died.
Peter Davison's still going. He was Doctor at the time.
Oh, yeah.
So there we are.
He was, but I mean, in fact, when a few years later, there was these Doctor Who novels, there was one done featuring Chameleon, and everyone said to this guy, be very careful now, because you make, and he actually died.
Yeah.
Seriously. Oh. I mean, a very nice chap as well, but 2 years later, he was dead.
He was dead, yeah.
He was only 35. Mm.
Well, you know, guys, do not, under any circumstances, look to actually do a retrospective and have a Chameleon-like piece for your next scenario. Just avoid it. That's not the way I sort of worried about such things, just as they said when they went into the tomb of Tutankhamun, but you never know.
And Jack Fielding's career, dead.
There you go.
Oh.
So the key thing is Alan Stevens and Fiona Moore will hopefully return.
I hope so.
As we sort of run our roll of honour, thanks certainly to you, dear listener, for being with us for the last couple of hours here on Southside Broadcasting Channel 1 for Hospedia. And, of course, you can listen to some of it again, hopefully in the near future, because we're having one or two slight uploading challenges at present. But those will be sorted through. Thanks to Katrina Lakin, to Katie Grimerson, to D World, to Lou Bevin, and indeed to Sarah Gayton and Alan Stevens and Fiona Moore for 7,200 seconds of sheer brilliance in entertainment. Fiona, have you ever come across Chaz and Dave?
But not physically.
No.
Yes, apparently it would seem that it's not the rabbit scenario, but I think you're quite a Chaz and Dave fan, are you not, Chaz?
Oh, I love them, yeah. Their lyrics define my marriage completely, you know. It's awesome. So,
rabbit.
Yeah, and There's No Please in You.
I was thinking in place of, I Do or The Vows, you actually had...